hi, I'm Andrew Keith Walker.
Hello, I'm Barbara Reith.
Hi, I'm Laura Rodriguez.
Hi, I'm John Kernan.
Hi, I'm Nick Bruce.
And this is the number one regulatory reporting podcast in the EU, the UK and around the world. So join us as we go behind the scenes and under the hood to look at the big issues and news stories, companies and personalities who are shaping the world of RegTech, FinTech and trade repositories. Welcome to the RegisTR Roundup. And remember, this podcast is brought to you by RegisTR, which is a six company and features members of the RegisTR team and special guests offering their personal opinions, not the opinions of RegisTR as an organization. There is no representation made as to the accuracy or completeness of information in this podcast, nor should you take it as legal, tax, or other professional advice. And welcome back to the RegisTR Roundup. And we are back. Yes, it's season 9. It's episode 4 of season 9, and we have a very special episode for you this week. So in a departure from our usual special guests and in-depth discussion about their interests, today we are talking all about your interest. Yes, we're talking about the questions that came up from client events we've been holding all about the latest iteration of our user acceptance testing environment for our EMEA refit reporting tools. And we've had over 700 market participants. And that's quite a lot of the European reporting obligation participants there. We've got over 700 participants. We've had dozens and dozens of questions come through about the nitty-gritty of getting into EMEA refit. And to steer us through this, we have a very special panel today. Of course, joining me is my co-host, the voice of reason himself, the head of business development at RegisTR, Nick Bruce. Nick, welcome back.
Thank you, Andrew. Good to be back as always.
It is good to have you back. And sadly, we have no football-related humour that we can use to torture you. So I'm disappointed about that. Are you a tennis man?
I love my tennis. I've not been, though, to Wimbledon for ages. So I don't know when this comes out. Wimbledon will probably have finished. But at the moment, clearly, I'm working really hard, but when I get an opportunity, I am tuning in to see a little bit of the tennis.
It is. It's a bit naughty, isn't it, the tennis? Because it does, you know, just as you're passing the TV, you think, oh, I'll just turn it on for a couple of minutes. And some hours later, then you have been, especially with the Djokovic-Herkovic match, that was something that they really tried to wreck a lot of careers and meetings with putting that one on over 2 days. I think.
Completely. I've got to say as well, the great thing as well, working for Regis is, obviously being a Brit and being a tennis fan is lousy because you already know, come the second week of Wimbledon, you have absolutely no interest in it. But the fact that we've obviously got half of our team out in Madrid, I'm an honorary Spanish. So it means my interest carries on. So look, I'm back in the winner of the men's. I know who's going to win it, and it's a Spanish winner. It's not Djokovic. It's going to be a change on that trophy. There's going to be a new name on it.
It's true. It's true. Very much, I suppose, if we were to think about Arsenal and compare that to Spanish football teams, yes, Spanish tennis players definitely have got a much better record. And I'm sorry, I had to say it. On that point, I want to bring in two key members of our product management team who have been busy interacting with market participants and bringing all this useful information together for today's session. And that is, in no particular order, starting with Alvaro Gascon from the product management team. Alvaro, welcome to the show.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you. It's great to have you along. First time on the show, which is good. It's always nice to get new people on and showcase a bit more of the team there in Madrid. Are you watching the tennis? Are you a tennis fan?
Well, I used to play tennis, but just for 2 years when I was a kid, and I don't even know the rules anymore. I don't watch it.
No, I've honestly, that's more than me. I swung a racket once, missed the ball, and hit my shin, and went home in tears with my mother. That was it. That was tennis lessons over there. That's a sad insight into me. And joining Alvaro here, we have someone else in the product management team, Victor Rodriguez García, who is here with us. Victor, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, now, you know I'm going to ask you the tennis question. Are you a tennis man?
Yes, I'm absolutely a tennis man. I practice tennis twice a week. I used to play matches, so I'm a mini master on tennis.
Okay, well, you'd certainly beat me. I'm going to say now, I could just, you know, without even going there. And that's That's even if I had lessons, I suspect, because, you know, my hand-eye coordination isn't brilliant. That's why I'm a podcaster. I was going to say, Alvaro, so if you're not a tennis man, who's your football team?
Atletico Madrid.
Atletico Madrid. There you go. And Victor, what about yourself?
Real Madrid.
Real Madrid. Okay, we've got a bit of a derby going on here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
we can fight now.
Is that like a sort of Registiar thing? Because, of course, John and Nick, John Kernan, the CEO in the UK, is a big Tottenham fan. Nick is a big Arsenal fan. That's a big London rivalry. Okay, that's enough banter for one week, because we do have serious issues that we want to bring up, the issues that have actually been raised by the clients. Tell us where this has come from, because you've been hosting webinars and events. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, Andrew, I've got to start. It's a little bit of a confessional. So I am looking for absolution. So this all starts from a webinar that we held on the 13th of June around, and you mentioned it earlier, around our new UAT environment. Now, actually setting up that webinar, someone had this great idea that they would task me with the responsibility for recording it as we did it. And you can imagine what happened. If you task me with anything technical, it's going to go wrong. So unfortunately, the recording didn't happen. We got a bit of a partial recording, but we didn't get the whole event. And it was an absolutely fantastic webinar, as you mentioned. We had over 700 clients join. And actually, we organized this from around, I think it was about 8 or 9 days notice. So it was very little notice. So we had a great community join. And actually, on the back of that webinar, we had over 80 questions that were raised during the actual webinar itself. Now, the reality is, yes, we addressed a number of those questions during the event, but that was just too many. And I think it just shows, just generally across market participants, across our client base, how many questions are out there. People are still getting to grips with both the regulation itself, but also with the functionality in our new environment. And what we felt would really help is just have a dedicated episode where we could just run through some of the key themes that we've seen and hopefully just answer the questions that we saw. So that's really what we wanted to spend this time doing, is just going through that. And hopefully this will be a great reference point for our clients.
Okay, that's good. And I mean, let's start off then with one of the questions, because a lot of what we're going to be talking about here is the nitty gritty day-to-day mechanical operational stuff that market participants need to know if they're going to get to grips with the tools and actually, you know, get value and, you know, an effective working process quickly as they adapt their own internal systems around to the new reporting obligations. Okay, Alvaro, I want to start with you, because one of the key areas that you've noticed, there's been a lot of questions, was around changes to the responses that clients receive following refit. So let's break that down. What are the changes that clients are going to see post the implementation date in April next year?
Yes, so we have already our new refit UAT environment, and they can upload files and receive response files. One of the main changes here is that multiple business validation errors are shown in the same for the same message. So this is actually in our current EMIR system. The system checks validation. If one validation is found, the validation process stops. Then this is kind of an issue for clients, because they have to amend this error, then try again, so a new submission, then a new error could be received again, and then this is like a loop. Then one of the main advantages that we have with this multiple errors per message is that they can receive all the errors in the same response file, and then they can amend them all and try a new submission.
Okay, so this is a good sort of development in terms of bulk sort of processing and actually making sure that we're, you know, offering market participants the best opportunity to correct all the errors we can find, as opposed to getting that sort of sequential error system going. Victor, I want to come to you here, because what are the sort of error codes that are being returned, and are there any issues with clients understanding error codes?
Well, I want to say that error codes are a set of errors that ESMA has identified as possible validation errors regarding the validation rules. In this way, Registiar will use ESMA's codes. However, for those errors for which ESMA has not provided and a standardized code, RegisTR will generate its own. For example, a rejection due to a submission of an action type, an action type new over an already existing triplet will be rejected with a RegisTR proprietary error code. Well, additionally to these kind of logical errors, RegisTR will use as well its own error codes for those validations that ESMA has not provided an error description, and indeed, it is needed regarding the validation rules. As a quick summary, for refit, we have four different type of error codes. Those are the file-level validations, permission validations, logical validation, and finally, the business rules.
And Victor, I think the important thing here as well is when it comes to the error codes, what we'll see with refit is the fact that there's far more granularity around issues with files when they're being submitted. So for market participants, they'll be able to identify very quickly where the issues are to address them to resubmit, which is a real positive.
Well, talking of files, Nick, that does bring us to one of my favorite topics, as you know. Coming from a tech background, I do love a bit of XML. I love an XML standard, as you know. Now, we've talked in many shows in the past. In fact, we've actually met with some of the people from Swift who helped develop the ISO standard. So ISO 20022 standard is still having a few teething problems, isn't it, for some market participants when it comes to file formats, especially market participants perhaps who are dragging a little bit more in terms of legacy systems and are still using CSV files and, you know, slightly older versions of the tech. That when we think about our golden cloud of fantastic systems, we forget that sometimes not everyone has those. So tell us a bit more about that. What have been the questions coming through about file formats?
Yeah, I don't know who wants to take that first, but certainly Andrew, from my side, when you look at it from the client perspective, this has a huge impact. I think we've talked about this multiple times on previous podcasts in the look. A lot of the market are very familiar now with the ISO 20022 standard. They've been using it for SFTR reporting. It's become the global standard, and it's part of efforts from regulators globally to harmonize. But saying that, when you look at EMEA reporting, because of the impact that has across a huge universe, there is still a large portion of that universe that they don't submit today via XML. They're using CSV format, and for them, when you just look at the complexities anyway with refit, the additional fields that need to be reported, this creates an additional, a huge additional burden. And this is why for us, and one of the things where certainly I saw a lot of the questions coming in over the course of our webinar was actually around the tools that we're doing to support that. In particular, really, it's that CSV XML converter that we're going to be making available for refit. So within our platform, so the clients can actually format their CSV file, submit it to us. We'll be able to then convert that into an XML format for clients to actually then check before submitting. So that way clients can prepare in a CSV. They can convert it through us, but they still ultimately get the opportunity to do the final check and the submission, which is important because under the guidelines of the regulation, market participants must submit in an XML format. And the TR must receive in an XML format. So by doing it that way, we're complying with the regulation, but we're just easing that burden on our clients, which I think is really important. But I know Victor, from your side, you've been working hand in glove with our client service team around this and fielding questions. I don't know if there's any other aspects that you've seen as well.
Yes, as you told, this is an important functionality that we are going to deliver in the upcoming weeks. So we have in that point good news for clients because we are aware that the main of the concerns of the clients is how are they going to build the XML file. So this tool will help definitely to them to convert the CSV files to XML. So in the upcoming weeks, as I told, we will have this functionality in UAT environment so they can test everything. Also, with that functionality, we are going to provide to the clients a template just to facilitate them the population of that CSV files. So it will be good.
And you're working with ESMA on this, right? So from a product management point of view, I suppose it's very important that, you know, you actually identify any teething troubles early and make sure you've got the actual regulatory authority supplying the best fit fixes for any issues that come up or discrepancies that market participants find when they're trying to convert their files across.
Yeah, actually, Andrew, I think that's a really interesting point. It possibly leads into another area. So I think with the converter, and I'm saying this without having seen the template, so I'm almost as excited as our clients are to see what goes live in our UAT environment, because that's the first time that clients will be able to see the template for the CSV conversion. Now, what you'll see with that template is it effectively follows the schema that is already supplied by ESMA. So yes, we're working very, very closely with ESMA around the schema. I think what this actually leads into, which is another point, and I will have to pass this one over to the guys because I am definitely not an expert on it. I know now we've got the final schemas, there are still ongoing discussions and there are still parts of the schema which are being, let's call it fine-tuned, ready before go live. So these are things that still have to be configured and we're still going to have to incorporate within our UAT and within the go live. And it's actually important that clients are aware of that. So probably best if I hand over to the guys on that side to maybe give a little bit more color, because it's not something I'm directly involved in, but I am really cognizant of.
Yes. Well, we are working together with ESMA just to identify some kind of discrepancies, error, or some kind of issues that the schemas may have in comparison between with the validation rules. We have already identified that issues, and we are aware that ESMA is working in a new draft version for validation rules and schemas. They are going to deliver that new or kind of final versions soon, and with, I guess, all the errors detected fixed. What kind of errors? For example, if you have in mind the schemas, we have some kind of discrepancies regarding, for example, the conditionality of the fields. For example, in the validation rules, we have some fields that the regulation said that are mandatory fields, and in the schemas provided by ESMA, some of those fields are conditional fields. So that kind of discrepancies. Another good example is, for example, a particular field, for example, in the validation rules that are set as a format with a date in a way of year, month, and day, for example, and in the schemas, the format is date as well, but for example, in a format of year, month, day, and hours, minutes, and seconds. So these kind of discrepancies, we have identified all of them, and we are working together with ESMA in order to fix that discrepancies.
Okay, so Alvaro, I've got to dive in here because this is the working late, nitty gritty, put your glasses on and go through the very fine print to identify these tricky issues, which, you know, are essential for these systems actually functioning. You know, we always talk about the big picture, about, you know, data lakes in the sky, and can you identify the best counterparties, and, you know, can you, you know, improve your internal workflow by getting your data in order and sorting out that tricky nominal amount field that no one seems to be able to fill in reliably. But actually, it's the nitty gritty of getting this stuff doing. It's what Silvia Morales, who's been a guest on the show many times, would refer to as someone's got to work over Christmas when a new regulation launches. Is this the kind of thing that's going to be keeping you in the office over Christmas, do you think?
Yeah, kind of the things, exactly. So we need to, as you said, put the glasses on, check the Excel documents, comparison with the XML format and the schemas. So yeah, kind of a boring task, but we have to do it to work with ESMA and to try to check everything in advance of the regulation.
Okay, good. Well, this brings us actually to the big question, in a way, because this is one of the most asked questions. According to analysis of the questions that came in from the market participants, connectivity. Now, this is, you'd think, is one that actually everyone would already have a great handle on, but it's not nearly as straightforward as it appears, is it? So Victor, tell us more about this. What are the connectivity questions the market participants are asking?
Well, regarding this topic, just to comment that RegisTR is going to provide a manual and automated connectivity options for the submission of derivative reports and updates and the reception of status messages, reports, and other communications. And yes, for manual connectivity, as you already know, we have the option to manually upload the files through the EMIR dashboard. To proper access to the Emir dashboard, it would be needed that the users download in the mobile phone an application called Futurai. This application is just in the Apple Store and are in the Play Store. And this application works just to get a required token for entering in the Emir dashboard. That's for the manual connectivity. For automated connectivity, we will have the option of the SFTP connectivity and the web service connectivity. In the release we have delivered in the last 19th of June, RegisTR has provided the SFTP connectivity options for clients, and the web service will be ready soon in the upcoming weeks in a further release. And for SFTP connectivity and for those clients that has not configured yet the SFTP connection, we have to remind that there is a section called connectivity details in the release note document sent to the clients before the deployment of the release on the 19th of June, where it is detailed the host name, port, and the username that the clients have to update in order to make a proper connection with RegisTR, for refit UAT environment.
And just to be clear, I mean, when we talk about connectivity issues, for people listening who think, well, surely this is a no-brainer, connectivity is just a straightforward matter, it's not, is it? This has to be industrial strength security. It's got to be absolutely guaranteed that there's no chance of any breaches or issues with, you know, hackers, whoever the guy in the hood is who keeps appearing, you know, on the virus that's on my computer and asking me for Bitcoin. It's okay. It's, you know, I paid it. It wasn't worth anything. For those guys, this is all about security, isn't it? Having the right kind of connectivity.
Yes, exactly. So, for instance, as Victor mentioned, we have this new application for the Emir portal, which is a double factor of authentication. So, yes, it is. We have to ensure that our connectivities are sure. Yes, to avoid any issues, and it will be sure. It will be safe for sure.
Okay, good. And there's another element, isn't there, here, which I suppose comes in, which is to do with the sequence of reporting back to market participants, because there have been questions asked about the trade status report and sequential reporting and what's happening on a T+1 basis or a T-1 basis and the timings of reporting and feedback. So, Victor, can you tell us more about that? What have been the market participants' concerns there?
Yeah, well, first of all, it is remarkable to say that we have introduced additional characters in the file name so that entities can indicate the sequential order in which they would like to register to process a set of files submitted at the exact time. However, here comes a very, very important point. RegisTR will consolidate the records to calculate the trade state report based on the event date rather than the chronological order of submission. The trade state generated by Regis will be available at 6 a.m. on the day T+1, including the records reported up to the event date T-1. So the trade state transaction level will be delivered to the clients through the schema WAUTH 107 defined by ESMA, and the trade state at margin level will be delivered through the message AUTH 109. This functionality as well will be delivered in the upcoming weeks in a new release version where the clients can test all the things related to the trade state report.
One of the things I was going to say is actually, as someone who's not so technical, this really highlights some of the changes that we're seeing within Refit, but also some of the enhancements we're doing with our own capability. Because when I speak to clients today, there are issues around clients that send multiple files in batches. And potentially then it's how do you order the processing of those files. And when you look at Emir today as well, under the current regulation, the file that's processed last overwrites the previous data. So actually, by being able to sequence the files, we can process them in order, which I think is really important. But also, with the event date, actually now the record will show all of the activity rather than overwrite. And I think that's a really important development as well. So when I hear this, I just, in my head, I can picture the improvements and how this will help us in the future.
Good. Well, talking of help in the future, we have another hot topic that came up. And this, again, has been one of the most asked questions after connectivity. and it's permission delegation, which immediately, as we say it, everyone's sitting, yeah, okay, we know this has been a complicated one to adapt to, and there are planned changes to the rules governing permission delegation under REFIT. So, Alvaro, can you talk us through what the main changes for permissions delegation is going to be and what the impact that's going to have on the process of reporting through the RegCR system?
Yes, we received many questions, and I understand clients about this because there is a significant change for EMIR REFIT, which is that the delegating entity will need to confirm the delegation request informed by the submitting entity. So at the moment, it is enough with the information that the submitting entity reports to the TR, and the delegation becomes effective. But now, with the new regulation for REFIT, the entity that has delegated the reporting will need to confirm the information about the delegation request to actually become effective. So there are two steps now. This is the main change. The first one will be the submitting entity to report the delegation information, either in a CSV file, like it is currently done, or in the online EMIR portal. This request will trigger an automatic email that RegCR will send to the delegating entity to continue with the second step, which is the confirmation or rejection of the delegation, which is actually the new point of the regulation for this permission and delegation. So only after the confirmation, submitting entities will be able to report on behalf of their delegating entities.
And this speaks to the issue that we've talked about many times in the show, Nick, that we've got more entities in scope. We've got small financial counterparties. That's a new kind of entity. We've got financial counterparties. We've got non-financial counterparties, but two kinds, the NFC plus, NFC minus. We have different kinds of delegating options. And, you know, it must be causing quite a lot of confusion for participants, as well. It's been asked. I mean, this is a significant change to take into account, because this could be a bit of an operational showstopper for the sort of current workflow that the market participants have established.
Yeah, completely. This, I must admit, so if I step back and I look, I can remember going to a BaFin round table. This is probably now 4 or 5 months ago. And this actually became the focus of the conversation at one point, because there was such concern around operationally, how will this work? I think there's some really important aspects here that ESMA have actually taken away and looked at it and worked with us to say, we need to make this manageable, especially for REFIT launch. So one of the key elements is the fact that if reporting is delegated today, that delegation effectively will transfer over. So there will be no need for us to double check with the delegating party that is still valid. So that's one good thing. So this will only be for new delegations past go live date. Another aspect I think to consider as well is actually the UK have taken a very different stance on this. So what the UK have said is you don't need to do the delegation. You don't need to confirm the delegation. So that is going to be a difference in the UK. But what we will be doing with our platform, because we have that capability there, is that in the UK even, if you are reporting on behalf of another party, you still have the ability to put in the email address and to validate that delegation. So we can do the validation, but it won't be a requirement. But it will be something that will still be available on the UK side. So that's the difference between the UK and the EU in terms of the way that they viewed that aspect.
Okay, so far, this is all going well. There's no issues. It's a nice, normal flow. Nothing too hard for the product development team to handle. You guys have got it covered. And then we hit the big one, right? The elephant in the room, as it has been called, which is the upgrading of legacy contracts to the new REFIT standard. Now, I'm sorry to raise it, guys, but, you know, I know this is going to be a tough one. So I want to come to you, Nick. I'm going to start with you, because we've talked about this, haven't we? The issues to do with open. There's always something. Open trade, legacy contracts. There's always something that's going to cause problems finding the data, if it's even available to fill in additional fields and that sort of stuff. Tell us about the legacy contract problem.
Yeah, look, it's for me, this is another key area where I get asked a lot of questions from clients. And a lot of the time they're asking us, for their guidance around best practice, which is always awkward because there isn't a best practice. We don't know yet. I think from my perspective, when you look at the regulation, after go live, market participants will have 6 months to upgrade their legacy trades to the new technical standard. Now, within that period, they will still be able to report life cycle events. So it's really down to the individual entities in terms of what approach they want to do. Do they want to do a big bang? Do they actually anticipate that from refit, there potentially are going to be a number of issues that could arise? So this is something that they want to put maybe on the back burner. So there is no right or wrong approach. I think from my perspective, what market participants need to do is they just need to consider the technical sort of aspects of it. And I think that will help them to kind of form for them what will work best. And that'll probably depend on the amount of contracts they have, et cetera. So probably I'll hand over to Alvaro because Alvaro knows the technical aspects. So much better to pass on to an expert. That's why you don't want me talking and rambling on.
Yeah, so of course, it would be a huge point for participants, but they need to know that actually the old legacy standards and the refit new standards will coexist. And we are working on that to adapt the reports to include all kind of contracts. So especially after the go live for those 6 months, Nick commented, they need to coexist in the same report. So clients will receive reports with information of the old legacy contracts and the new ones reported after the go live. So this is something that it's creating a lot of work in our side to raise the R for adapt the system for both standards at the same time.
Okay, good. Now we've covered off a lot of the major questions that have come up from clients. But there's something else I want to ask you about this, because so far we're talking about the sort of the necessary reactive responses to a change in the regulations. And that's one thing. But there's another side to this. And Nick, I want to come back to you on this because you're a business development guy. You've been in business development, product development, not just with RegisTR, but with, you know, major banks developing securities lending solutions in new markets like the Middle East, back with HSBC and various other things in your illustrious CV. I was going to say checkered past, but let's face it, it's, you know, you've had a great experience of taking new products to market. Now, this must be a chance also to review the RegisTR offering and think to yourself, well, hold on a second, there are changes you can build in now with such a major overhaul, which are going to be delivering more value back to clients. So what are the sort of the added extras now that you're building into the system that is going to benefit clients moving forwards?
Yeah, really good question. And I think from my side, that's exactly that. When we looked at refit, one of the first decisions we made as an entity was, look, this is a great opportunity for us to look at our platform and redevelop our platform. And around that as well, yes, there's the regulatory aspect and delivering to the new refit spec. But it was also looking at what are the key drivers behind refit and how can we actually help our clients? And really, one of the key drivers as I see it has always been around data quality. It's always a theme on our show. We're always talking about data quality. And for me, it's, well, brilliant. So this is a great opportunity for us to build things like a better reconciliations engine to actually look at the universe we have. You know, in the EU, we're reporting more than 50% of all derivative trades are being reported through us. So that's a great pool of data. So how can we take that and maybe provide things like benchmarking data to our clients so they can actually start to look at their performance or their reconciliation rates and say, well, not just where are the issues, but is that good or is that bad? How do you know what good looks like? So if you can actually start to compare yourself to your peer group, maybe to the market or to the overall universe, that's really powerful. So these are the kind of things. So when I'm talking to Alvaro, when I'm talking to Victor, these are the things that excite me because these are the tools that we're building into the portal. And I think that is really important because it will allow us to empower clients to better manage the data that they have. So, I mean, Alvaro, I know we've been chatting about this. Probably better if you give sort of some of the oversight in terms of the things that we're going to be delivering. And certainly that's going to start being rolled out and clients will start to see it in the UAT.
Yes, so for the reconciliation, as you mentioned, there's a lot of data to be checked on our side. So actually, the process itself would be similar to the current EMIR system, but in the portal, in the EMIR portal, we will provide statistics regarding reconciliation. For instance, as you said, comparisons against benchmarks to check also what are those mismatches that I'm having all the time that the users can check, which is that field that is giving them problems. They cannot reconcile that at least counterparties are reporting in a different way. So it would be an easier and friendly way to check reconciliation information directly in the dashboard in the EMIR portal. We expect to have this in the upcoming months in our EUAT system.
Okay, as we're getting to that stage in the show, it is now time for... Yes, it's AI Corner. We are going to be doing a test. So I have created an AI version of Victor and Alvaro, and I asked the AI version of you what the biggest questions market participants were asking about EMIR Refit. And it gave me an answer. So can you, this is going to be a slightly different format this week. Can you guess, seeing as you actually know what the answers are, because we've just been talking about it, can you guess what your robot version said? So I'm going to start with you, Victor. I asked robot Victor, what's the most asked question by market participants about EMIR Refit? Can you guess what robot Victor said? Was it the ISO standard? Was it the increase in reportable fields? Or was it the unique product identifier?
I guess that ISO standard.
It was the ISO standard. Well done. Well done. Very good. And I have to say, that is good news. That's the first time the AI has actually come up with a decent answer. So well done. It was, in fact, the ISO standard. Okay. And Alvaro, this is one for you. And this is spooky, actually. I asked robot Alvaro what the most asked question by market participants was about EMIR Refit. And it came up with one particular thing that it added to Victor's answer. Can you guess what it was? Was it the increase in reportable fields? Was it talking about the issues of delegation? Or was it talking about corrections to reports and control frameworks needing to be in good shape? There we go. Can you guess which one of those it was?
Well, I was about to say the increase of number of fields, but as you, the last one, see, it was so long, maybe I go with this one.
Yes, well, you know, I did kind of give it away there. I fluffed the line, I'm going to admit it. I did fluff it because I couldn't believe it, because it freaked me out a bit when I said, okay, Robert Alvaro, it came back and said, corrections to reports will require the support of trade repositories and control frameworks will need to be in good shape. And I thought that is weirdly specific, I've got to say. So, Nick, I'm going to make you the judge on this one. Has finally the AI come up with a decent set of answers? I can't beat the hands-on information that the guys have actually got. But that's what do you think this week? Do we give it a thumbs up?
I could be honest with you. I'm like Caesar. I'm looking out at that gladiatorial pit, and my thumb's kind of halfway because for Victor, absolutely thumbs up, completely get that. But I'm actually with Alvaro in the looking at it and speaking to market participants. It should have been A all along. That C was so convoluted and so precise that I don't know where it drew that from. I really have no idea where that came from. So I'm kind of hovering in the middle. I'm going to, for once, I'm going to give it the thumbs up. Okay. You never seem to give it the thumbs up.
So finally,
thumbs up.
It's a thumbs up, although I'm going to say that Robot Alvaro needs to chill out a bit compared to the real Alvaro. I'm going to say, don't ask ChatGPT to be Alvaro anymore. Just phone Alvaro and talk to him directly. But all the same, well done, AI. Good. Okay. Well, that is it. We've sort of come to the end of the show, but of course there is one last question here, which we have to ask, which is if you're a market participant and we haven't covered off your question, even though we've covered up all the top ones from around 700 market participants. And as Nick said, that's representative of over half of all the trades that, you know, the billions of trades that are flowing through the EU in the derivative space. If you do have a question, okay, or you want to find out information, what where can they go? What would you, do you recommend a market participant should do now if they want to find out more about, you know, how you're solving these problems or any worries they've got about their own internal systems? Victor, where do you suggest people go?
Yes, for a first contact of what Refit is, I would suggest the brochure. Definitely.
Okay. So there is a UK brochure and an EU brochure, obviously, because there are some variations between UK EMIR and EU EMIR. Oh, I think we should just call it proper EMIR. Yes, I said it. Post-Brexit, there's EMIR and then there's UK EMIR. There, I've said it there. It's too late now. Nigel Farage is on his way around to arrest me. Okay, Alvaro, I want to come to you. What would be your suggestion if market participants have got more questions?
Well, another source is SMAS website. We need to follow their word. They are updating their website frequently, so they will also provide the information there.
Okay, that's great. And Nick, what's your suggestion?
It's always hard to follow these guys. I think they're selling themselves short. I'll come to that in a second, but absolutely great advice in terms of our website, where we've got brochures that give an overview to the changes under the regime. And obviously ESMA, ultimately, everything we're doing, it's ESMA's template. That's the bottom line. There is no more proprietary template. So ESMA's website works. But it's actually in our UAT environment. So what the guys have delivered is an area where we've got called documents and support. It's a fantastic area. And they definitely shouldn't be selling themselves short, because their clients can access things like our handbook. There's resources there. There's even test schemas. So clients can actually pick up a schema and actually test that and run that through our UAT environment. So I think that's a great resource as well.
Okay, there you go. That is a fully comprehensive breakdown. And sadly, that's it. That's all the time we've got on this week's very special extended version of the RegisterR Roundup, going in depth with market participants' concerns over the implementation of their own refit systems. And I guess all that is left is for us to give a huge thank you to our guests. So in no particular order, we're going to give a big thank you to our product manager, Victor Rodriguez Garcia. Victor, thank you very much.
Thank you, you too. You're welcome.
Thank you, Victor. And also another big RegisterR round of applause for Alvaro Gascon, again, from the project management team. Alvaro, thanks for it. Much more relaxed than his AI version. I hasten to add, Alvaro, thank you.
Yes, thank you for the invitation. Thank you.
And last but never least, the voice of reason himself, a man who defies replication by robots. Yes, they just haven't invented a system advanced enough, apart from an abacus, to replace him. It is, of course, the voice of reason himself, the head of business development, and my regular co-host, Mr. Nicholas Bruce.
Thanks, Andrew. Yeah, until robots learn to drink, I think I'm safe. And a huge thank you to Alvaro and Victor.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Okay, good. Well, that's it. Do join us, of course, on our LinkedIn page. That is linkedin.com/company/regis-tr, where you can connect with Victor, connect with Alvaro, connect with Nick, do some networking, ask questions, and find out more about the show and, of course, the work that is happening, not just with RegisterR, but with the whole Six Group and their massive suite of operations that span across the whole of Europe. And in the meantime, from all of us here at the virtual studio, for me, Andrew Keith Walker, have a safe month, have a good month, and we'll see you in about a month. Bye-bye.